meeting is now being recorded.
Welcome to the IDN Guidelines Working Group call on 18th of May 2017. We have Matt, Dennis, Carl, Satish and Sarmad on the call. Over to you, Matt.
Thank you. And I think that we should go through the comments just from the start and going down and see our reaction on it. Anyone have any comments on that? And using the summary.
Yep, I'm good.
Okay. So let's start with the first comment, which is from Chile, from Nick Chile. If you could, let's see, do I have the control? Yes, I do. So, right. I don't really see where it is. It organized by where in the working in the guidelines it's comments on. Come up, please.
So I've tried to. What I've done is just listed these in the sequence they were posted. So these are chronological. And what I've done is gone through each of the comments and extracted portions and summarized them where some action was, I guess, desired or requested. So that's, and then if there were more than one actions, then what I've done is listed, numbered them one through one onwards. And in one case, I've also, made them 7.1, 7.2, and 7.3 because they seem to be related to each other. But in any case, each individual unique request or comment is labeled differently from all the public comments received. So CL1 and CL2 means they're two different actions which CL requested.
Yes. They kind of quote labels inside the zone, but I cannot find that in the our document. But somewhere I know that we talk about things in the zone, and my reaction on the first comment is that it's half right and half wrong. So the NS, it depends on they mean the owner name or they mean the R data. So the NS owner name must match the guidelines, but not necessarily the R data. Please comment. What happened to Satish? He dropped off. So you agree with me? Anyone? Yes, Carl.
Yeah, just reading this, I wonder if they're a little bit confused, and perhaps Chile has a different registration model or mechanism than GTLDs, and that's my experience. So it might be that we're coming at this in slightly different perspectives, but I mean, typically, any kind of IDN rules, registration rules, they're applied to the domain name that you're trying to register. They don't apply at all to MS records associated with the domain name. Having said that, if it's a child domain, and you're specified a name server that is essentially unregisterable in a domain name that could never be existed, then I suppose that I don't think that we should specifically disallow that, but that's a good warning that might be the outcome of some registration policies. I'm not sure I might be taking it a little bit further than what this comment might be suggesting, but I think that's probably the only context in which it makes sense. Otherwise, I think we might be going down a rabbit hole where we're being explicit about what you can't do in a whole bunch of scenarios that have nothing to do with domain name registration, because Glue records and host objects are not part of domain name registration, which is really the focus of the guidelines. And while it's true that we haven't spoken about them, I think that's kind of deliberate. It's not in scope.
Well, the owner name of the NS is the same as the registration. I don't find
right.
This
I don't think that's what they're talking about. I don't think that's what this clarification is about, though.
If we refer somewhere to zone, I think they say, I can't find it. Sarmad, please.
I'm also trying to figure that out, and I was reading our first recommendation, and I was wondering if that's where the confusion is coming from, which says that yearly registries supporting IDNs must do strict compliance with the requirements of ITF protocol IDNA 2008. So this particular recommendation is very broad, and you know, even though the intention was that what Carl was saying, that you know, this is applicable to the registration process, but the first recommendation is probably worded much more broadly than just the registration process.
But I'm confused. Do we ever talk about zone? Because they...
So the first recommendation is saying TLDs which are supporting IDNs. So it's sort of applicable to their zone, I guess.
Right. But they quote, labels inside a zone, unquote, should be clarified to mean, quote, labels, etc. And I can't find that text. Or am I looking in the wrong version, I think? I picked the guidelines, our guidelines from the website. Final draft for public comment. Okay.
Uh, Edmund has his hands up.
I'm sorry. Edmund, please.
Hello? Hello?
Yes.
I hope you can hear me and the background noise is not too bad, and apologies for joining a bit late, but catching up on the discussion. I'm guessing this is about the comment about potentially host names and name server names in IDNs and whether we speak to it at all. Is that where we are? Just want to make sure that when I make the comment, it's right.
We are on the first comment by the Nick Chile about the records in the zone.
Right. So if I understand correctly, it's like when you do a registration, you would provide name servers for the registration. And those name servers, if they are IDNs, are there anything that we need to talk about or speak to? I think that's a legitimate question. One particular thing that immediately comes to mind, and I think there's a point later on down the document about emoticons as well. We do know that certain TLDs are offering non-standard ID. I would still call them IDNs for the time being. The question is, if a gTLD receives that data as a name server record, should it accept it or reject it or do nothing? What if anything needs to be done? And I think the question is a legitimate one. Even if we say, we'll take anything that is submitted as name server records or host names, we should at least speak to it.
But I cannot find where the quote that they refer to. And we find what section they are referring to. Can anyone find that? Do we understand what
so if
they...
If you are looking for TLD zone space, there is some text we have in recommendation 5 which refers to TLD zone.
Yeah, but that is not the quote that they quote labels inside a zone, unquote.
This is Edmund jumping in. I'm guessing they're just paraphrasing and identifying the issue. Perhaps what is more important for us to talk about is how to whether to include the issue first of all, and how to and what to say about it.
Yeah. Well, I think the question is, do we have anything in the presentation that prevents the R data in an NS record or the blue A record to have something beyond what says for that node? Carl raised his hand. Please, Carl. And Edmund, mute.
I wanted to, I think, express my agreement with Edmund. I interpret that last sentence as being a paraphrasing rather than an exact quote from our text. I've actually had a look through the text and I can't find the matching one, so it can only be a paraphrasing sentence. As to whether or not we should address this, my initial thought was that it was actually out of scope of the guidelines, but I don't mind if we address it in a conservative way and just say that maybe too explicitly say that it's allowed. We don't place any restrictions on host name on how a host name is constructed, and that the normal consensus policies and RFCs would apply to that as far as how you would assess the validity of a host name. I wouldn't want to go much further than that into host name validity, because that's really outside the scope of the IDN guidelines, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree with you that it's outside the scope, but my problem is that I try to understand what they are referring to. And do we have any text that could be interpreted that we put restrictions on host names? Glue records. Do we have any text that could be interpreted that we have restrictions on the R data in NF records?
I think the comment is actually asking us to add it. So I don't think there's any suggestion that we have that that guide today, but that they're asking that we do add some explicit comment on that. So I would support having an explicit comment saying that it's out of scope and not.
Oh, okay.
And any suggestions or restrictions on what you can add. That would be my suggestion. I'm not sure if that exactly matches what the commenter wanted. But anyway, I think that's my feeling on the topic, at least.
Samad, you raised your hand.
So my follow-up question to the working group would be that would you want to put that comment as just a response in the public comment report, or do you want to include that inside the guidelines?
I think we want to have it in the guidelines to clarify then that what we are restricting here is the registration of subdomains and it does not affect any glue records in the zone or the R data of any records. Because they raised the question and that question could be raised again. It's better to have that text in the guidelines. That's my opinion. Does anyone, Edmund, agree? Carl, agree? Dennis asked if it's a new guidelines or making clear in the introduction. I think it's worth to have on its own board, so to say, in the guidelines. I'm not sure exactly where to put this. The first section is about transition, so that's not relevant. Format of IDN tables, not relevant. Consistency of IDN tables of practice. I don't think that we have any good point. Any suggestion where we should put this?
If I may.
Yes, please. Dennis.
So I read the, so I think it's a misinterpretation of the whole guidelines, and maybe it's translation issues, right? As Nick Chile put it in his comments, if you read the whole letter, I think you will get the gist of it. So I say, we don't need to introduce a new guideline or making it clear within the IDN guidelines, that is section 2 of the document. I mean, the very nature of the DNS is that it's delegated, and each song administrator has the authority to restrict the names within its own level, right? So TLE is a second level, and perhaps third level if they are offering those. But beyond that, they can't really do anything about it. So I think just paraphrasing or making it clear in a way that it's clear that the guidelines are for levels which the registry operators are authoritative for, that should do it. I don't think anybody else is confused by that. So again, I don't think we need to introduce a new guideline as Nick Chile is suggesting, but making it clear maybe in the introduction section what is the scope or the intended scope of this guideline, and if we really maybe want to carve out a specific question, a specific section, maybe within the introduction is just introduce a subsection of compliance that where are we actually want to, these guidelines are intended to, and make it clearer that it's for new UTLDs and other registries, second, third, fourth level, it's just a best practice.
Okay, your suggestion is that we create something under introduction, a new section there with a headline scope. And within that, we state that what these guidelines are limited to the domain can control or something, and exemplify that delegations are only controlled on the owner name side and not on the RDate or something.
And again, this is if we are intending to address these in that way, because, I mean, this is just one data point, right? So one comment from one organization. To me, really,
yeah.
I don't think this is something that it's confused. I mean, the IBM guidance it's been there for many years, and I haven't come across a comment like such as this one. But again, it might be, I mean, coming from Nick Chile, I maybe it's something lost in translation, and that's why the confusion. So if we put something in within the introduction, just making it clear what's the scope, then that should address his concern.
Yeah, and I think that should cover the two comments from Nick Chile. Edmund has raised his hand. Please, Edmund.
Thank you. And I'm hopefully in a better environment now.
Much.
So I think that is one possibility. The other is 2.7 and 2.8, whether we were going to either strike it completely out or you know, have something to say about the registration data. And this is part of the registration data. I think I still think it is, even though it's a comment, you know, just one comment, I still think it's a very relevant comment. As a GTLD operator, one of the concerns could be, you know, whether name servers and host names, they're still kind of domain names in many sense. Whether they could be published in the DNS at the registry zone, I think we should address that issue directly. And if we think that it is okay, let's take a simple example. Let's say if it is okay to put ns1.smileyface.ws in the zone file of a gtld. I think that is the key concern that this question, you know, this comment raises. And I think this is going to be a question that other gtlds might ask. So I think we should be specific about it.
Yeah, I think so too. We should be specific, and I think that we should not have any objection to whatever the next level chooses to have it in their host names.
But it could be a second level, right? But it could be an NS record that has a second level IDN that doesn't conform to these guidelines.
Right. So if you delegate the domain that you delegate, the owner name of NS, that must conform to the guidelines. But on the RData side, it might be a name which does not conform to the guidelines, not even IDN. That's out of the scope of the guidelines. Paul, you raised your hand.
I think I was going to say roughly the same, that ultimately if someone does want to have a delegation to smileyface.ws, that should be considered, as far as the guidelines is concerned, it should be considered entirely legal, permissible, and ultimately we would have no guidance to operators on what to do with that. We would have no comment. So long as it's a legitimate, well-formed host name, and that those requirements are covered elsewhere anyway, but it's entirely out of scope. I don't mind putting it explicitly in the document so that we make it clear that it is out of scope, so that people understand that we're only talking about the contents of the registry and what might ultimately be part of the owner name in the TLD zone file.
Oh, if I understand you correctly, if the target or the object is .example, ws.example is delegated, and that could be delegated to the name server smileyface.ws.example.
I think in that case, whether it's underneath the TLD for which you're responsible, or even if it's delegated to an alternative, if it's smileyface.com, for example, and you're the operator for .example.
Right. Yeah.
I think in all cases, as long as it's a valid host name.
Right.
And so my only comment was that I think it's probably a good idea to have an explicit comment in the document that says it is out of scope, rather than let people derive that from the lack of text or just sort of interpret that from our text. I think there's nothing wrong with saying it's simply out of scope and making that explicit within the document.
Okay, then I think that we have agreed that the two first comments of .chile should result in a text under a scope or something in the introduction section, and that it should state that these guidelines only concern what's authoritative in the zone and the names that it delegates, and does not covers anything that names are delegated to. That is host names that are not authoritative of that zone. What you mean, Edmund? And yeah, Dennis says okay.
Yeah. So Edmund here. I guess one of the challenges is what we talk about it, and I think Dennis makes a very good point. What we need to decide is, I think we already have some consensus to say we're going to address this issue in the guidelines. What are we going to say? Is it that simply that this issue is out of scope, or we say that this type of hosting could be accepted and it's not considered non-compliant with this set of guidelines? These two approaches are quite different, and we probably need to pick one. I'm not sure I have the strong opinion one way or the other. I kind of waver between one and the other, and I think we need to think this through.
Anyone else? Well, Carl suggests out of scope. I could accept either. Carl, please.
I just wanted to clarify that, like my comment there, that I think if we make a comment there that it's acceptable or that it's unacceptable, or that we allow that, we may end up conflicting with other consensus policies in the future that address the where this is actually genuinely in scope, that will involve the discussion of whether registration data has to meet certain linguistic guidelines. So I think given that we've not addressed it, we've not considered it, it is probably most accurate to describe it as out of scope rather than to say it's acceptable in our opinion because we haven't actually addressed it at all in our deliberations. So I think it's just safest and probably the most forward compatible option is to leave it out of scope explicitly rather than have a statement that accepts it but without any justification or strong research on it.
I suggest then that we tentatively put it as out of scope in the introduction section, and that we later on when we see the totality of the document, including the result of processing these comments, then we'll see how we'll do it, and we can have a second discussion. Edmund?
Yeah, I agree with the idea that we park it as out of scope at this time, but I think perhaps this is a time for us to perhaps proactively call upon Patrick and the ESSEC to weigh in on this and look at it and perhaps produce a document which would be very nice to have. So I don't know if we could just as a action item that perhaps you and me and Sama try to reach out to Patrick specifically about this topic and see if ESSEC will take note of it and do some work around it.
Okay. Well, it's never wrong. So let's do that. We park it out of scope, attempted to have it out of scope, and then get in touch with Patrick and see what he says. Okay. So I think that we should move on to the next comment. It's a comment from Open Exchange. Well, there are several such comments. The first one, I don't, well, they see a problem of confusables. The first comment, or the one without a digit, no, well, it's far up. So, I don't see really what they want us to do.
So the one without the digit is just a comment. It's not really an action requested from us.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So we have discussed the confusions, etc. And then the first one. OX1. Okay, they want to be quite tough about confusable. They want to enforce variants. So, what should we say about that? Anyone? Yes, Carl, please.
Well, I know we addressed this a little bit, I think earlier this year, actually, if not late last year. And my first thought is that the confusables file, it's certainly not conservative. And we in this group should really be as conservative as possible. Requiring people to implement that standard would be very disruptive to a lot of IDNs already in place, and it's quite the opposite, I think, of the sort of approach that we should be taking with this guideline, in that we focus on the absolute minimum that people must do to have a functioning IDN, rather than almost a gilt edge or gold plated IDN registration or registry. So, and I dare say that it wouldn't be that that intuitive to most users if someone were to fully implement the confusables algorithm. I think you might find that there'd be a lot of red labels that collide that you would not imagine collide. So it would be overreach for this guideline to include any kind of suggestion to use the TR39, in my opinion.
Well, if we look at what we say in recommendation 16 is that we say that it may apply rules to prevent those confusions. We don't require that they do it. So what Open Exchange wants is that it's mandatory, as far as I can see. So if we look at all the three comments from them, OX 1, 2, and 3, is that they require the guidelines to be more prescriptive in terms of the variance. And as Carl said, we have discussed that in length, and we came to this conclusion. I don't know what Dennis or Samad first. I'll let Dennis first.
Samad has had his hand first.
Okay, Samad, please.
Thank you. I just wanted to bring our earlier discussion in. In our discussion again, one of the reasons we had said May instead of, from what I recall, was that there was no authoritative reference list which could be used to have must in place. If I recall, that was one of the motivations to put May in our recommendations. I just wanted to share that information.
Dennis?
Thank you. I think a way to address these concerns, and OX Open Exchange is not the only one bringing this up, also the government of India made similar suggestions and comments. So there is some misunderstanding, and maybe we need to do a little bit of education when we respond to these comments. And first, right, confusable, and I agree with Carl. I mean, trying to fix the confusable issues is really an overreach of these guidance. Confusables are not only IDN exists in the IDN space, but also in the ASCII, and there are many, many examples on how domain names or coupon sequences can be used to make look-alike domain names. And then if you add font types and sizes, then you really can win this game. So that's one. The other misunderstanding is that there is an algorithm that can solve this problem. They reference UTS-39, which we use in the guidelines. The real issue is not how to implement a way to block this type of registration. I mean, that's the easiest part. If the real issue is what Sama brought up a few minutes ago, is the repertoire. What is the repertoire of these confusable or identical characters? There is no such authoritative source. So without that, really little that we raise can do. And that's why we ended up introducing this new guideline, but as a May, so that registries can look at these references and sources of information and implement what they think is best for their end users. That's it for me. I think Edmund has.
Okay, yes. Edmund, please.
Yeah, so I agree very much with the, you know, I think we've gone through this quite at length, and I'd like for us to stand by the actual recommendation. However, I will bring this up. This is one of the issues that is repeatedly coming back, and I believe it will come back again, perhaps at bigger and bigger, garner bigger and bigger response to it. So I think it's also an optics issue, and I'd like to suggest us look at potentially changing some of the wording. I I'm trying to look around, but I haven't identified it yet. But I think other places we have used must consider or must look into certain things, or, you know, the registry must consider these things. And so we put out a stronger wording for it, but not requiring the actual implementation of it, at least from an optics point of view, then those people who are watching our work now would feel that, yes, we care about this, but if they really think through it, they would understand, you know, with the other parts that you know, we've written, that there are other considerations here as well. But what is important, I think, is also to show that we, you know, we respond to those, I guess, public opinion.
So, if I understand you correctly, we could here have in recommendation 16 have a stronger wording that says that they must consider, not necessarily must do, but they must consider the confusables.
Yeah, this is one idea.
I like the idea, actually. Tom?
Yeah, I was actually going to comment directly on that. I disagree simply because the confusables, although in some cases it makes good recommendations and you can derive good outcomes, in many cases it's the opposite. In fact, you get quite ridiculous outcomes. I think trying to elevate the confusables to be more capable in people's eyes than they actually are might be dangerous. We might create a circumstance where people perceive that it is a failing of registry operators if they don't implement these confusables. And I think the opposite can be true. It can be because someone has considered the implications and decided that the outcome is too drastic or is counterintuitive to what a user might expect. So, in my opinion, the TR39 is definitely no more than a friendly suggestion, and I wouldn't want anyone to take the impression that it is something that they need to seriously consider if they've already if they're aware of it, any issues in their language, but don't have any concerns with those confusables, you know, outside of what TR39 would state. So I don't think I'd want to give this particular one more weight than it already does. And I think that the calls from outside the group to address it might be, I can't speak for their individual languages, perhaps it's quite relevant for their languages. And in that case, then I would encourage them to use it. But if they're speaking in general terms, I think the conclusion is simply wrong, that using TR39 somehow makes and assuming you can get an authoritative repertoire, of course, that somehow a registry is therefore safer and less confusable.
But isn't confusable relevant? Or what are you? I'm not sure that I understand what you mean.
I think it's relevant, but it's not. I would not want to elevate this guideline any more than we already have. I certainly wouldn't want people to consider it, because that could be misinterpreted in future years. If a language appears, if a confusable list for a particular language exists and a registry operator has not implemented it, in my opinion, they are entitled to do so. They are not required or even, should we suggest, for them to consider TR39. I think it's there if it's an issue in your language. And you can look at it, but otherwise I wouldn't want any kind of strong recommendation that might be interpreted as a some kind of justification why you might not have implemented 39 in the future. And that's really where I fear that this might go. If we place a must consider in this guideline, I fear that in later regulations or requirements, a registry operator might need to justify not including it in their registration policies, and I think that would be wrong.
Okay. I don't see the problem of required that they look at and consider confusing. Can you explain what is the problem to require that they consider it?
I think there's already been several comments. I think that's in the later comments actually, about how we make statements without obliging anyone to do anything. This is probably one of the, would be more egregious than those in my opinion if we had a must consider. That's going to be interpreted at some point as an obligation of a registry operator to have documented something, a reason not to use TR39. And I think when you're, it's more challenging or more onerous on a registry operator when you have to justify not doing something rather than the reverse. So I think at this point it's not an obligation we should put in. If we say must consider, then that implies that an action must be taken by the registry operator. And bearing in mind that this is going to go into people's contracts, I think that we only ask people to do something if we expect them and if it's applicable to all registry operators.
Well, I'm not sure that I really see your point. Someone, please.
Thank you. So I think there are a couple of layers of issues here, and I just want to make sure that we're all talking about the same point. So there is one, focus that we should address UTS 39. But I think as far as the recommendation is concerned, that was not really the motivation. UTS 39 was just brought in as an example or a relevant document. The issue was really that there are possibly strings which can be generated through two different IDN tables applicable to the same zone, which would produce a string which is visually identical. And that situation obviously should be prevented. Again, also hearing some of the comments, I think that issue itself can be broken down into two parts. There's an issue which is concerned with totally identical labels because they occur through a sequence of homoglyphs versus things which are confusable because they're similar. And I think maybe what we need to do is first clarify exactly the space we're talking about. My understanding was that we are talking about the most core subset of it, which is we're talking about just the exactly same homoglyphic strings, and we're not really talking about the larger confusability issues. If that is the case, is there you know, is there is that something we should be allowing, or is that something which can even be say something more stronger? And then, if in case we want to say something stronger, hearing what Carl just said also, and you know, having gone through UTR 39 and confusables lists and so on, maybe we can push that away a bit and focus more on the problem and not confuse that with the larger issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Samad. We have reached the end of the hour. I think good points from Samad, and I suggest that we, on our own, we go through this, the document, we have this discussion in our mind, and we continue and come to some conclusion next time on OX comments, and then we continue with the following comments. Anyone before we close the meeting? We have a next meeting next week. We have weekly meetings, and we should be able to go through this document quite quickly and have a new version of the guidelines, hopefully. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for attending, and thank you so much for hosting this meeting and keeping the minutes. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.